T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Total of 727 total positive COVID-19 cases. So those were 727 positive lab results. Unfortunately, among those, we're very sad to report that 19 individuals have died of this illness, which is very, very sad, and we want to reach out to their families and express our sorrow. On the good news is that 101 people have actually recovered from COVID-19. There are currently 607 people in isolation, so that's 607 people with COVID-19 who were actively following in isolation. Those are tested positive, and they have not yet recovered, and fortunately they have not deceased. So as of yesterday evening, there were 128 individuals who were hospitalized with COVID-19 in Erie County. Of those, 61 were in the ICU, and of those, 58 had some type of airway assistance, so they were on a ventilator. And as of yesterday, there were over 2,073 people in Erie County that were tested for COVID-19. And so that's all the labs. That's our county labs, that's our hospital labs, that's our commercial labs. So people in Erie County are getting tested. So this is a map of where our cases that have been identified already with COVID-19 reside. And so remember, these are only laboratory confirmed cases. These are not the actual cases. The actual numbers are probably 100-fold of what the numbers you see in there. So that's a really, those numbers are very deceptive. So I don't want anybody to think that, oh, I don't have to worry, there are only 5 cases in my town. There's many, many more than that. And some people have symptoms and some people don't have symptoms, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
And the only thing I'll add to that, Dr. Gale, in the southern part of the county where you see no confirmed cases have been identified, you should not presume that if you live in the southern part of the county that there are not cases in your community. You should just simply presume that we have not tested those cases to the point where we know there is a confirmed case in the southern part of Erie County. It is something right. that Dr. Gale and the county executive have been reiterating, that we should assume instead that COVID-19 is everywhere.
It is everywhere. Thank you. And so, and what do you want to look for? So if we're assuming that COVID-19 is everywhere in our community, that we have to assume that, you know, every time we get out of bed, we could be exposed. So we should monitor ourselves for symptoms of COVID-19. And so that would be checking yourself for fever. And here we're calling fever a temperature of 100.4 or higher. And then, and either a cough or difficulty breathing, shortness of breath. Those are the classic signs and symptoms of COVID-19. You know, hearing from my medical colleagues in the community, they are seeing people who are, they test positive for COVID-19 who have other symptoms. They may not have a fever. Instead, they may have sweats and chills. They may have extreme exhaustion. They may have loss of sense of smell and taste. So again, it's not always a fever and cough or difficulty breathing. And it may start out as something else and then evolve with these other symptoms, or never develop those other symptoms. You know, everybody's different, and we just have to assume that, you know, anybody can be COVID-19 positive. So if you develop symptoms, what should you do? So first of all, remember, you are contagious if you have COVID-19 symptoms. I mean, what is common is common. So we know that many people who have classic COVID-19 symptoms probably have COVID-19. If they don't have that, they have another virus that could infect other people. So what we want people to do is isolate themselves from the rest of the community. So that means removing yourself from the rest of the community, even other people in your household that you could infect, to make sure that you don't transmit an infection to other people. You know, even if you're doing okay and your symptoms aren't that bad, that doesn't mean that the next person that gets infected couldn't have very severe symptoms. Remember, everybody is different. So what we recommend is just stay away from other people, even within your house. And then it's a good idea to get some medical advice if you want to get better idea of how to weather this storm of COVID-19. So I would recommend calling your healthcare provider. You know, call their office. You don't have to go in there. You can get a lot of great information with over the phone. And I think all doctor's offices now are holding like telehealth office hours. So either by phone and video, like a Skype, or else by just by phone alone. So those are options to get an appointment and get good medical advice, get the ear of a good healthcare provider. So please do not just go directly into the office, especially if you have symptoms. Call ahead. Remember, it's you don't want to infect the other people in the waiting room or the other healthcare providers. We need our healthcare providers. We need to keep them well. So even if you think you need to be seen in an emergency room, when you call 911, let them know that you're suspicious that you have COVID-19. And then if you do show up and drive yourself to the emergency room and an urgent care center, again, call ahead, even right outside the door in your car. Let them know that you're suspicious you have COVID-19, and they'll make sure that they're prepared. You know, there's something they're going to do with that information to keep everybody else healthy around you. So they're going to make sure that you have a mask on, they have a mask on and personal protective equipment. They're going to make sure that they usher you right back into an exam room and you don't expose anybody else in the waiting room or the office. So it's just good common sense to keep the rest of our healthcare workforce and our community healthy. So with the warmer weather, we know that many restaurants have outdoor seatings. So restaurants with patios and, like, you know, other seasonal restaurants like ice cream parlors and hot dog stands that have outdoor seating must comply with the executive orders related to food consumption and social gathering on the premises. So they, you know, that means that people have to be seated far apart. That means that you know, they have to, you know, keep their distance. There can only be so many people in that one patio space or that one outdoor space. And we are going to enforce that. In the Erie County Health Department, we have sanitarians that are still working very hard to not only inspect for food safety, but also inspect for personal safety of failure to adhere to the governor's office and possibly putting other people at risk for COVID-19. So we will enforce these, and we have closed a couple of restaurant bars down already with law enforcement. So for restaurants, again, it's time for you to be prepared. It's time for you to plan ahead. So, you know, if you're worried that, you know, people are not going to adhere to the seating requirements or the gathering requirements, like, block off that outdoor space so people can't get there and they'll have to go back into their cars or get takeout and go home to eat. And if you, you know, if you can't remove the seating, you want to put signage out that says that this part is closed and there's no eating or drinking on that premises. So again, you know, be prepared. Just think ahead. You know what you need to do to comply with the governor's office because orders, because we are going to enforce them. So, you know, another point I want to bring up is that we're seeing across the country, people develop some very, very serious effects from chloroquine or hydrochloroquine that has been mentioned as a possible treatment for COVID-19. So we know that this is only a trial run right now. It's an experimental drug, and it's being used for our sickest patients in the hospital that have COVID-19 as an experimental basis. So we have not proven anything yet. The FDA has not proven that this is really effective medication to treat people. And also, like, chloroquine and hydrochloroquine have a lot of really bad side effects. I mean, people die from that, especially children. I mean, the dose in one pill of chloroquine can kill a toddler. So we have to think about one pill can kill. So this is really scary medicine. It can cause toxicity to the heart. It can cause toxicity to the lung. It can cause toxicity to the nervous system. It can cause hypoglycemia. I mean, this is a, can be a really dangerous drug, and you can't take it lightly. So it's some a drug that should only be taken by prescription under the direction of a healthcare provider. I mean, I've taken it when I've gone to work in Africa. I mean, it's like it's a big deal to take it. It's not a, something to be taken lightly. It has some very serious side effects. So remember, you have to trust the sources of information. Good health information should be obtained for number one, your healthcare provider, and number two, there's good public health information on our website at erie.gov/COVID-19. Also, the New York State Health Department and the CDC have good information. And also, you know, call the Poison Control Center if you have questions about the toxicity of hydrochloroquine or chloroquine or any other drug that may have been on, you know, on the in a blog or posted about possible treatment for COVID-19. Right now, as we speak today, there is no FDA-approved treatment for COVID-19. And every drug has good side effects, that's why we take it, and every drug has bad side effects. And if you take a drug that has no proven good side effects, all you're going to do is suffer the consequences, bad side effects. And these all can be very serious, especially for young children. So please be careful. Do not, and you know, since travel, all bets are off for travel now, you don't need to go. There's nowhere in Erie County where there is active cases of malaria from mosquitoes. So you do not need this medicine in your home.
I hope nobody doubts the seriousness with which Dr. Gale is conveying this information. So please do take heed to the information she's sharing.
Right. And on that slide was the poison control number if you have any questions. So, I the schools are not in session right now. Everybody's doing some distance learning. So I want to give a homework assignment for the adults and young adults that are waiting for their next homework assignment. So what I want you to do is make a plan for your household. So that is your homework assignment. What are you going to do if you or someone in your household falls ill with COVID-19 symptoms? And again, COVID-19 or they have some other virus that causes similar symptoms that can also be dangerous. So now is the time to prepare before it happens. That's what the whole preparedness is about. So this is your homework assignment. Next, so let me talk about the specifics. So to make a plan, first of all, there's certain steps that you have to take. First, you want to talk to the people and talk with people that you might need to include in your plan. There have to be, you know, people in the community, healthcare providers, you know, your neighbors. Like, who needs to be in your plan? Who's on your contact list? You also want to make sure that, you know, who are the people in your household that, you know, if you get sick and you're responsible for caring for them, who's going to care for them? If you're a parent with young children, if you're a person that has an elderly person in or somebody with other disabilities in your home and you're the primary caretaker, because we're seeing that a lot now, if you get sick, you're not going to be able to take care of them like you had. So you really need to start thinking about a good, solid plan B. So until you can weather through the recovery if you get infected with COVID-19 and develop those symptoms. So, you know who your neighbors are, know who you can contact, know who those community organizations are that can help get food and help, get the number of your pharmacy that can get medicine delivered. Just know who is around that can be helpful to you. Write down your plan. You know, put together a list, put it the old-fashioned way on your refrigerator or on your phone, take a picture of it, put it on your phone at a place that's accessible that everybody can get. And, the names, contact information, what are they the go-to people for? Like, really need a concrete plan. And next slide.
The only thing I'll add there on that, Dr. Gale, is part of how Erie County prepared for this is we also made a plan. And we asked each of our department heads, for example, to submit their continuity of operations plan. So just like we would do here in county government in preparing for an emergency, this is what Dr. Gale is asking each of us to do at home, to prepare for that emergency by making a plan for home.
All right, so if someone in your house is ill, you want to make sure that they follow their doctor's instructions because they might have other chronic conditions. They make sure that they, if they're ill, they might be a little confused and have a little bit of difficulty following them. So you just want to make sure that they're doing what their healthcare provider recommended. And then you want to make sure that the sick people are separated from the well people in the house. So if there's one or more sick people, they have to stay in their own bedrooms. They have to, hopefully they can use their own bathroom. And if there's only one bathroom in the house and people have to share, you got to make sure that it's wiped down clean after every single use with good disinfectant. And there's information about good disinfectant to kill the COVID-19 virus on the EPA's website. Avoid sharing any type of household items. Don't share food. Don't share cups. Don't share utensils. Any type of frequently touched surfaces, you want to make sure that they're cleaned down. You want to make sure that laundry is washed thoroughly, and the way you get the person in isolation's laundry, you give them an empty big garbage bag, have them fill it up, and then throw the contents of the bag into the washing machine or at your home or in the laundromat, and make sure it's washed really, really well, hot water. And then also make sure that spaces that you do share, you're all living in one roof in an apartment or a house, make sure that you have good airflow. The weather's nice now, open up the windows. And also if you have sick people that talk into the mic in the home, make sure that you do not have any visitors. Like don't bring people in from outside the community to visit. And remember, it's we want to keep the crowds down anyway in one place, so this is not a time where visitors should be present.
Every time a visitor comes to your house, you're introducing a new variable into the equation. And we all know that this will go better if we decrease the variables.
Right. You can infect the visitor, or the visitor can infect you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gale. We know that the reality of the COVID-19 crisis in our community has expanded well beyond just some of the healthcare challenges that individuals are facing. So we know that one of the other top issues people are facing is the need for childcare. We know that many of our essential workers are struggling with childcare because the schools in Western New York are closed, certainly through April the 20th, if not longer. So if you are an essential worker in need of childcare, we are urging you to go online and complete a survey with www.wnychildren.org. This is the website for the Child Care Resource Network, and they will connect you to a center who is providing services near you or near your place of work. We also have been working very hard through our Department of Social Services to lift some of the restrictions on funding for child care subsidies. So if you are an essential worker and you need child care and you're going to have a hard time paying for that child care, we have a way to support you. We urge you to call 858-8953 for assistance in paying for child care, and Erie County DSS can help fill that need. We also know that small businesses in our community have struggled, truthfully, all across the country. And we are glad, of course, that the federal government has provided some assistance here. So this slide talks about some of the assistance that may be available to you if you are a small business owner. So there are loan programs and paycheck protection programs available from the SBA, the Small Business Association. And business owners can find out information about those applications on the Empire State Development website, which is listed there, esd.ny.gov/small-business-administration-SBA-COVID-19-loans. So we urge you to take a look at that website if, in fact, you are a small business impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. We also urge you to check out the website for the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. The partnership is the Chamber of Commerce for our local community, and they are providing assistance to businesses, not just member businesses, but they have lots of valuable information on their website, which can be found at thepartnership.org/COVID-19. We know also that many folks are struggling to make ends meet during this difficult time, particularly if you were laid off. We have provided information in earlier press briefings with the Department of Labor, and we would encourage you to go through the Department of Labor to get any type of unemployment benefits that you may need. As you know, unemployment benefits are provided by the state government, so you can access unemployment benefits by going to labor.ny.gov/unemployment assistance. But we know that that may not be enough. And so this slide provides information about food stamps. Erie County Department of Social Services does administer food stamps on behalf of the federal government, and applications for SNAP can now be completed online. You do not need to make a personal visit to Erie County DSS in order to make that application. So you can apply online at www.mybenefits.ny.gov, or if you would prefer to have a formal application mailed to you, you can request an application by calling 858-7239. Finally, our COVID-19 call center is operational. It has maintained operations. I want to take a minute and thank all of our COVID-19 hotline call takers. They have done a tremendous job at answering questions from the public and trying to provide the kind of accurate information that Dr. Gale has talked about. It is so essential to make sure that we are communicating with the public in a forthright and accurate manner. So the call line remains open, 858-2929. It is open 12 hours a day from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. There is and does remain a high call volume, so we do encourage you to be patient. And there are also numerous other websites that you can go to get additional information. These are some of the things Dr. Gale talked about in making sure that information is accurate. Erie.gov /COVID-19 is a great source for information. You can also check out the New York State Department of Health's website, or of course the CDC's website, which is provided there. We will entertain some questions, but I wanted to just close simply by continuing to thank all of the Erie County workers that have helped address this crisis and will continue to address this crisis for as long as necessary. That's what it means to be a public servant, and we are here and glad to do it. I want to continue to add my gratitude for all of the essential workers. You remain the backbone of our community. All of the healthcare workers, all of the childcare workers, the grocery store workers, and all of the folks in the supply chain that get those groceries and those pharmaceuticals to your door. There are so many people that are involved in that, and I want to take a minute and just thank them. I heard finally a slogan that I thought was worth sharing. Tough times don't last, but tough people do. We are tough people, Western New York, and we can get through this with time and dedication. So with that, we will gladly open it up for questions.
So I'm going to be taking our media friends off mute. Please keep yourselves on mute until you're called upon. We have an echo in here. So I'm going to start with Stephen from Spectrum News. Anyone from Spectrum on the call? Okay, we'll go to WBFO. Okay, we'll go to anyone from Channel 2.
Hi there, Steve Brown here. Quick question off the top. Is Mark taking a day? Is he busy with other things that wasn't clarified? And also, in regards to the announced death, how precise are we with knowing that COVID-19 caused these fatalities? Has there been a post-mortem of some sort that confirms this? Or is that assumed that if they had COVID-19, were in hospital, and passed away, that is what killed them?
Thank you for your question, Steve. I'm happy to answer the first portion of your question. The county executive is fine. He's not taking a day, but he is taking a moment. I was on the phone with him as late as 11 o'clock last night and have been in communication with him, even up until lunchtime today. But he is taking a moment, and I'm very happy to do my part in giving him whatever space he needs for the time being. Dr. Gale, do you want to address the second portion of that question?
Sure. So these deaths are all a confirmed COVID-19 related deaths. So the actual cause of death may be different than, actually just COVID-19. I mean, it's usually somebody who has, say, pneumonia or influenza or another infectious disease illness, and they die of a complication of that illness. We call it for example, with influenza, we'll call it influenza related death. So these are all COVID related deaths, but they all may have died of maybe a cardiac event or a pulmonary event or different causes of events. But these were all deaths were all among COVID-19 positive testing patients.
Great. Next question.
Thank you.
Anyone from Channel 4? Okay. Anyone from Channel? Anyone from Channel 4? Anyone from Channel 7?
Yes. Hi. There's actually two of us on the line. If you guys are Max and Carter, we're on different phone lines, but. And I know we both have questions. Just first off, thanks so much for your questions today. Just a clarification question. As far as people being tested, I know the Erie County Executive tweeted last night that 2,200, a little over, have been tested so far in the county. I know you just announced 2,000 people have also been tested. Is that an additional? That's the first part of the question. The second part is, just looking at numbers specifically from yesterday, compare Erie County with our friends in Onondaga County and Central New York, they tested 1,500 more people and half the population. Why is this? Is there a stockpile issue here in the county?
I can take the first step to that question. I believe we are reporting the same numbers, Madison. So in other words, it's not that there have been a total of 4,000 plus tests, but rather the number that was reported by the county executive last night is the same number roughly that the doctor shared earlier today.
Right. The New York State Health, thanks Maria, the New York State Department of Health has started recently providing us with total numbers of positive tests and total numbers of people in Erie County who are tested, because traditionally we don't receive the negative test results at the health department. However, the state health department is receiving those data, and they are sending them to us on a daily basis now all the people tested the prior day. And then, second question was?
I think that was it. Okay. Madison, did we get all of
We are, so we have tested, quite a number of people in Erie County. And, right now we know that COVID-19 is prevalent in our community. We know that there's community transmission. And so what we need to do, we know that there's a lot of COVID-19. So what we need to do right now is making sure that while we are all, staying at home and practicing good, physical distancing and social distancing, that people are able to get to work, so we can be comfortable. So we want to make sure we're testing our healthcare providers to make sure that they're able to stay at work and that they're able to take care of us when we're sick. We're testing our EMTs so they can take us to the hospital if we get very, very ill, very suddenly. We're testing our police and our fire, making sure that we stay safe in our homes and because they they keep us safe. So those are our strategies right now to make sure that people who are essential employees who may have COVID-19 are know what their status is so that they can stay safe and be removed from the rest of their workers so they don't infect, you know, all their other healthcare workers or their other police officers or other firemen or and because we need them to be at work. So that has been our strategy. What we're doing to look at trends is we're using New York State data to follow trends with hospitalization and deaths, and that's actually because that denominator is really the whole community. So we know out of the whole community how many people were hospitalized with COVID-19, you know, how many people unfortunately expired with who had been diagnosed with COVID-19, and so those are good reliable trends with a good reliable denominator of the entire community. We had more testing available, we would test more of other essential employees, like our people working in grocery stores and childcare providers when needed. We are testing some childcare providers and people working in nursing homes. However, those are a limited number of tests, so following trends is really difficult because we don't know what the total, if we can generalize that to the rest of the population. What we can look at with good trends to really measure the burden of disease in our community is looking at the hospitalization rates and the death rates, because that's among everybody in the community, whether they've been tested or not.
Thanks, Dr. Gale. Our next question we'll entertain is from Spectrum News. Anyone from Spectrum have a question? Okay, moving on. How about folks from the Buffalo News?
Hi, yes, there are two of us. This is Sandy Tan of Buffalo News. A question about the percentage of cases of all tests that are being done. What percentage of those are coming from private labs versus the county's own public health lab? Or I don't even know if you have the wrong numbers, and I'm also curious as to the breakdown as far as the number of positive cases between the public lab and private labs.
Sure, I'll let Dr.
Sure. I actually don't have those data in front of me, and how that affects our population. I think what we really need to do is look at, in terms of morbidity, are the number of people that are hospitalized and unfortunately the number of people that expire. I mean, that's really how we're going to measure our morbidity. So, you know, number of positive tests, that's something to look at. We know the numbers are going to go up. You know, where they got tested from, I mean, that's, we know that we're all working together to make sure that our essential employees are tested and, to keep people that are essential in the workforce so we can stay well. So that's really the data that we are focusing on, because that's what we need to use to make sure make a plan and would change, you know, what we're going to do with those people's test results. And then I just wanted to clarify something with just in terms of the restaurants with the outdoor seating. So people, there should not be any outdoor seating in the restaurants until the governor's orders have been rescinded. However, we're worried that people might congregate outside these restaurants if it's a nice day, and so we don't want that space used for people to gather. Remember, social distancing is key. So we want people just to understand that when they go to these restaurants where in the past, you know, they'd hang out afterwards in the outdoor weather, that's not going to be the case this time. We need people to scatter and not be close to each other.
Okay, terrific. Let's move on. A question from WBFO, if you're on the line. And how about from WBEN?
Hi, Maria. Mike Benjamin here.
Hi, Mike.
The governor today said that there are only about 6 days' worth of ventilators left in the state stockpile. Does that provide a grim outlook for Erie County, given that a lot of the resources for the state has been going to New York City?
It provides a challenging outlook. There's no question about that, Mike. This is something that the governor has repeated over and over again. He has asked the president, of course, to use his powers under the Defense Act to manufacture more ventilators. So I think it is something where Local government and state government even cannot respond to the crisis without a coordinated federal response. And that is information that we will continue to need to push right up the flagpole. Dr. Gale, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, and then I would like to add, so this is something that we should all be concerned of. And then even more impetus to practice good physical distancing, good social distancing, good hand washing, cleaning our environment, especially cleaning frequently touch surfaces, because that's what we can do to make sure that people don't need a ventilator, that we keep our the peak of number of people who are ill with COVID-19 down, keeping the number of people that need to be in an intensive care unit down, including keeping the number of people who need to be on a ventilator down. Like, we have to take action now to keep those numbers down in the future. So we're all in this together, and we all play a part of it. So, our state government's working on this, the local health department's working on this, our other county partners are working on this, and then everybody at home now listening to this can work on this too by practicing good social distancing. Everything we all do collectively is going to count to change that curve and keep it down and keep whatever ventilators we have hopefully to be enough for what we need to meet our community's needs.
Great. So then I think we'll just run quickly through the rest of the roster. Do we have time for that? One more time. So taking it from the top with Channel 7.
Is there anyone from the Associated Press? How about Annette?
If there's no one from the Associated Press, we'll move forward with Channel 7 then.
Sorry, this is Max McCarty. You guys made the entry on earlier. Just following up on some of these questions, based on my bad journalist math, I think about 73% of the tests came back negative, according to county executive's numbers last night. And I know, Dr. Bernstein, you just spoke about why we're testing, who we're testing. But are you concerned that we're not testing the general public, therefore our numbers aren't reflective of what our needs are in terms of the governor saying he's going to go where the numbers are? Resources.
Well, the numbers that he looks at include hospitalizations. They include deaths. It's not just testing. I mean, there is a shortage of testing throughout New York State and throughout the United States. I mean, I listened to a story this morning on the radio that talked about states that didn't really have testing at all. So again, there are more data that I think is very, very valuable to measure where we are on that curve than just the number of tests. I mean, the number of hospitalizations, because you get hospitalized whether you have a test or not, and if you're hospitalized with a symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19 or could be consistent with COVID-19, that's when we use our tests, is to test those patients to know what type of isolation precautions that we need to use to keep our healthcare workforce healthy. So again, we know the people in the hospital that have COVID-19, and unfortunately, many of those are among the expired have come from the hospital. So we have a good idea, and those are good community-based numbers, and those are numbers that we follow. It's numbers that the governor follows in New York City. It's numbers that the governor follows throughout New York State, and those are numbers that we're following too. Again, because every place in New York State has a problem with getting access to testing, and we have to be really smart about how we use this precious, all our precious resources, our ventilators, our ICU beds, the staffing that works on the ICU beds, and our tests. We only have a finite number of tests right now. Hopefully that won't be the case forever. Right now it is, so we have to be very smart with how we use them. And we have to use them on people where we can make a change. So that's on patients that are admitted to the hospital, so to help protect our healthcare worker staff force. These are tests that need to be used on healthcare workers to make sure that they are healthy, and if somebody is infected, they're removed from the rest of the healthcare workforce so that everybody else can stay at work. And they're used for our first responders, our police, EMT, fire, people working in skilled nursing facilities, long-term facilities, our child care providers. We need to keep them at work. And that's where we have to use our tests right now. And a week from now, if the market opened up and, we could get as many tests as we not, that would be a different story. But right now, we have to act on what our reality is. And this is our reality. And science and public health has to drive our policy. And that's what we're doing.
I think that's a great way to end that comment, Dr. Gale. I was going to say we have to work within the reality, and the reality is that there is a limited number, a finite number of tests for the time being, and therefore we have prioritized them the way the CDC has recommended. Moving on, Channel 4, do you have another question? How about Channel 2?
Yeah, thank you. Kathy Hochul, on her visit here today, said that she spoke with Mark Poloncarz yesterday. Is that in regards to resources that were needed here? And to your knowledge, was testing supply, testing capability brought up in that conversation?
Steve, I'm sorry, I don't have direct knowledge of the conversation, the details of the conversation between the county executive and the lieutenant governor. I know they did talk. I know that she offered words of encouragement. I know that she reminded the public and certainly the local elected leadership here in Western New York that she is herself a Western New Yorker and a fighter for Western New York, but I don't have the details of that conversation. Spectrum News, do you have a follow-up question? How about any additional questions from the Buffalo News?
Yeah, hi, it's Aaron Bessiger. Dr. Bernstein, can you, the numbers that the county released today, 124 new cases and 7 additional deaths. What do those numbers mean to you?
Well, it just confirms that we are moving along the curve heading towards our peak. Unfortunately, this is going to be a long journey. We're just at the beginning. I mean, these numbers may seem huge to us right now. In a week's time, they'll be I can't even say 10, 20, 30, 100 times more than they are right now. So I just want people to understand we're just at the very, very beginning of dealing with this pandemic, and it's going to be a long haul. And so we have to think about how we're going to make these changes sustainable, and how we're going to live under this pandemic environment. We all know that the numbers are going up, and that just confirms it. And I think we're just at the very beginning of the acceleration phase. And we estimate that we're about 2 to 4 weeks behind New York City, and so that's actually can be good. One can take that as good news because we have time to prepare, we have time to plan, we have time to implement good social distancing to keep our curve lower than what they've seen in New York City to make sure that our peak curve of people who are ill with COVID-19 stays well within our healthcare capacity. Again, so we have some time on our hands right now, and we have to use that well. It's not just sitting around and going out with your friends and waiting for the bomb to drop. I mean, we are right now, what we do now is going to affect what our life will be like in 2 to 4 weeks.
This is Sandra Tan at the Buffalo News. I just wanted to follow up also regarding tests. Exactly how many tests does the county have left, and how long will that last you?
I actually have to check. I haven't had a minute to check in with our lab today. We can give you that number later on. Yeah.
The only thing I would add to Aaron's earlier question is that as Dr. Gale was talking about kind of preparing for the long haul, I just want to reflect that, that the long haul is what will happen if things go right to some extent. We want to prolong the time period with which we are addressing the situation such that there is no one spike that is greater than what our healthcare system can handle for a sustained period. So to the extent that we can both bring down the number of total cases affected as well as stretch the number of cases affected, we will better be able to care for those that are ill in and part of our healthcare system. So, I think what does the data say to us? Part of the answer to that is that the data tells us that we have to remain the goal of both bending the curve down and widening it in general. We'll just move on now. WBFO, do you have a question? Are you on the line? If not, WBEN.
Annette from Buffalo Healthy Living.
Gail, as you
continue your preparations for this, because like you said, we're, you know, 4 weeks or so behind what New York City is going through. Are you identifying other locations other than the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center as a possible way to combat coronavirus? I know that's a process with the convention center. Are any other sites being considered right now? If so, what are they?
So we're, you know, we're talking about it. We're thinking about it. I mean, first, you know, foremost, we need to get approval for that site being built at the alternate care facility being built at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center, and then we can, you know, start seriously to talk about other sites. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has not returned to look at other alternative sites. I think we have to really understand, you know, what we can do with our convention center first, and that, you know, what the bed capacity can be expanded to there before we start to make concrete plans for additional sites. But it is something that we're talking about and we're thinking about, is where, if we need additional sites, you know, where we show the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to for them to assess.
The incident command structure in county government has a logistics team that is dedicated to precisely this issue, and not just this issue, but logistics in general, logistics about how to spread out our workforce, logistics about how we might continue to house people that that need to isolate but are not able to isolate in their own personal residence. So so the logistics team in general is looking at the variety of things that need to be done, and as Dr. Gale said, the Army Corps of Engineers and the resources available to them are focused primarily right now on the convention center. And as additional resources and need become the case, then the logistics team will continue to expand the search. I was told that the B News also is on the line and has a question. Anyone from the B newspapers?
Hey, Maria, this is Ethan Bowers from the News. Thanks so much for taking our call. This might be a question for Dr. Burstein. Doctor, given the recent CDC data that tells us that roughly a quarter of those infected are asymptomatic, it seems that any measures taken to flatten the curve at this point are based upon knowing who is infected. And to do that, we need to test everyone, not just those experiencing symptoms. How long will it be until we're prepared to do that?
Well, actually, what we're asking people, everybody, to do is monitor themselves, whether they have symptoms or not, or whether they go near people who have symptoms or not, and social distancing. I mean, social distancing includes staying away from people who have symptoms and staying away from people that don't have symptoms. I mean, you're right that we've known for a long time that there are people who are infected with COVID-19 that are asymptomatic. That's why it's so important to practice good social distancing, and that's just not staying away from people that are sick. It's staying away from anybody that you don't live with, and then when somebody is sick, you know, staying away from them even when you live with them. So, I mean, what is reasonable, and wearing masks. I mean, that is a tool we have for harm reduction. Again, wearing masks in the public is not going to completely protect you like a good medically fitted N95 mask. However, it is good a strategy for harm reduction. So it is reducing your risk of exposure. So it's, you know, everything that we do in, you know, collectively, all these layers of non-pharmaceutical interventions, and just assuming that anybody at any place in any time, whether they have symptoms or not, could be shedding virus and could be transmitting infection is how we have to operate right now until we can get a vaccine.
I think, Ethan, the only thing I wanted to add is really that the premise of your question is somewhat flawed. And the reason I say that, friend, is because it isn't really just about the amount of testing we can do in the community so much as it is about the non-pharmaceutical interventions. We cannot forget that the greatest power to influence how we will respond to the crisis comes down to the individual behaviors in our community. And there is no doubt that testing is a critical weapon in the arsenal of fighting the disease, but it is not meant to replace the types of social distancing measures, the types of environmental cleanup measures of washing and sanitizing, the types of surfaces that are frequently touched, of using good respiratory etiquette, of not touching your hands with your face. All of those things are all things that we have the power to individually control and which the broad public has the power to influence and are necessary.
Right. And then, thank you, Marie. And then, Maria, there was another thing that you have to remember with a test. I mean, that just shows what your status is at one point in time. So if somebody is asymptomatic and they test negative, it doesn't mean that tomorrow they wouldn't test positive. It just means that at that time when you were tested, if it's positive, it means there was enough virus to be detected by that test. So, you know, again, that the amount, the testing provides limited information. It just tells people what their status was at the time they got tested. So that's why it would really be unrealistic to test everybody every day, regardless of symptoms. That's just because that it would just not really be feasible. So what we can do is practice, you know, good social distancing and these other non-pharmaceutical interventions, because that's something we can do every day.
Terrific. I know we are running short on time, friends. I've been told that Annette from the Associated Press has a question.
Oh, Annette from Buffalo Healthy Living.
I beg your pardon. Does Annette have a question? If not, I think I had also left off calling on WBEN. Was there another question from Mike at WBEN?
Largely, I'm all set. I just wanted clarification that aside from the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center, the county is trying to identify other sites, though, correct?
I think other sites for, are you specifically talking about other sites for a hospital?
Not necessarily a hospital, but like an alternative treatment facility.
Oh, there, yeah. Yes, that's a great point, Mike, because we're hoping that people that with COVID-19 that are admitted to one of our acute care facilities and need, you know, very high level of medical care will improve and they'll get better and then they won't need that level of care anymore. So the hospitals are working together and they are identifying sites to provide what we call subacute care. So it's people that don't need to be in an ICU or a medicine surgical bed in the hospital with intensive care. However, they're not quite well enough to go home and, you know, be on their own without any medical supervision. So we're calling these facilities subacute care, and I know there are plans underway to convert spaces, buildings that, you know, currently are used for something else or actually close to these subacute care facilities to care for people who are on the road to recovery for COVID-19. So you bring up a good point, because it's not just the acute care beds that we have to worry about. It's also people who need, you know, subacute care. And then also in Erie County, you know, we've secured some hotel space for people who are COVID-19 positive, and then they otherwise don't have a place where they can stay in isolation. And so, you know, we're helping to keep those people in a safe, warm environment with food and in keeping them like away from the rest of the community until they have free of virus, they've recovered.
And I guess, Mike, what I meant to say about the logistics team is that they continue to review places throughout the county for any variety of the possible needs that Dr. Gale just talked about. So whether it's subacute care or hospital care or just isolation, the logistics team is working on finding that those additional spaces at any time. So I think we will close it out.
Annette, one more time.
One more time. Annette. Do you have a question? Going once, twice. Very good, friends. I just want to close this out by simply saying another useful quote I thought in the time, a river cuts through a rock, not because of its power, but because of its persistence, friends. So I want to close simply by saying we extend our condolences to the families who have lost loved ones as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. We express our gratitude to the essential workers that continue to be the engine of helping our community respond to this crisis. We close also with the knowledge that we, all of us, have the power to bend this curve, to flatten it, and frankly, with the persistence to hang on. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you again for another update tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.